Sudhir Patwardhan.
Alongside painting and sculpture, mixed media works and installations are establishing themselves as part of the changing art scene in India. As in the rest of the world, their presence is likely to grow. It is this change we are referring to when we say that the situation of painting is changing today. There are broadly two ways of seeing this change. One may say that the situation of painting is changing as a result of the emergence of new forms. Or one may say that the emergence of new forms is a sign that painting is no longer adequate as a medium. The first position, that the situation of painting is changing as a result of the emergence of new forms, should be acceptable to most people, even if they do not entirely welcome the change. The desire to experiment with new materials and to bring new modes under the concept of art is a perfectly legitimate desire. The presence of these new forms opens up new possibilities. Attraction of these possibilities is a strong competitor to painting, a situation painting will have to come to terms with. It is the second view that the emergence of new forms is a sign of the inadequacy of painting that I would contest. According to this view, our present condition and our experience have changed in a way that painting, which was once adequate to express our experience, is no longer so. It seems to me that it is not inadequacy of a form that causes a new form to emerge, but a change in artistic aim. We do not experience emotions that the old form cannot hold, or we do not experience the world in new ways and find that we do not have the means to represent these experiences. We decide to say something else. We become aware of new possibilities which allow us to formulate new artistic aims. And while allowing legitimacy to new aims, I would maintain that it is perfectly possible to continue with a painterly aim. What counts as significant is not newness of aim, but the relationship one can establish between one's chosen form and one's experience as a whole. How does a painter's artistic aim or purpose take shape? Through looking at paintings, others' paintings, and then his own work as well. He experiences painting as an aspect of the world, and he experiences aspects of the world as painting. He practices a seeing as painting on his inner and outer worlds. He not only expresses through painting, but experiences as painting. This is the sense in which a painter's experience is inscribed by language, the language of painting, the form, and the different conventions within that form. The limits of the form and the conventions are not experienced as restrictions. They define the area of one's practice. They are the field of one's action. I would now like to show a few works of four artists. Two of them one has already seen slides of, Give has shown them. I am going to show works of Tayyab Mehta, Give Patel, Atul Dodia, and myself, and to see how the forms of painting have served and continue to serve different artistic purposes. We continue to be startled and delighted by the stunning power of Tayyab Mehta's images. This is so in spite of the fact that the essential features of his language have not changed for over 25 years. The language that Mehta uses derives from three sources: Expressionism, Cubism, and color field painting. Indian miniatures may be mentioned as a fourth influence, especially on his thinking about color. First slide, lights off, please. Mehta's aim is to construct a strongly structured image which will communicate a particular emotion. He uses fragmentation and restructuring of planes to achieve this. The device, borrowed from the cubists, is used by Mehta to analyze perception, but to create the equivalent of an emotional experience. Added to this is Mehta's sophisticated use of color, which is expressionist in the sense that Matisse and color field paintings are expressionist. In spite of its bright hues, this is a surprisingly calm paint. Mehta has said, "The resolution of the colors in most paintings is in gray. But in certain miniatures, the resolution seems to be in white. This painting seems to come close to that ideal." The Drama, a celebratory painting. The range of emotions in these three paintings we have seen is quite removed from the violence and terror we usually associate with Mehta's work. But they form an important aspect of Mehta's total oeuvre. A painting we saw in the morning, Kali. Excuse me. Yeah. More in line with Mehta's main preoccupation. I repeat this slide because many of us feel that this is one of the strongest images to come out of recent contemporary Indian art. May I have the lights, please? The question that comes to mind while responding to Tayyab Mehta's work in the context of our present discussion is this. Expressionism, cubism, color field painting, each arose as a movement at a particular time and place. Their original meaning is surely tied up with their particular histories. Mehta evolved a language which combined these strands in the late 60s and early 70s. This was a significant contribution to Indian painting at that juncture. But the significance of Mehta's work is not stuck at that point in history. Neither the original meaning of expressionism or cubism, nor Mehta's intervention through their combined use, exhausts the significance of Mehta's work. The way Mehta continues to use these conventions, having completely internalized them and transformed them for his own purpose, it scarcely matters when or how they originated. What holds our attention is that Mehta paints today. What holds our attention is what Mehta paints today in this manner. I do not want to imply that languages are neutral. They do carry their own meanings. But when an artist like Mehta uses a certain convention, there are not two sets of meanings, one belonging to the convention itself and one introduced by the artist's working of the convention. The artist's work sets the whole talking as one thing. This is part of the artist's aim. Another artist may be able or may want to set the two apart through quoting and commenting on a convention or using it ironically. But that certainly is not Mehta's aim. Thanks. I shall now show you some of my own work. I will concentrate on one aspect of it, that is the representation of perceived space. Many conventions have evolved over the centuries and in different cultures for the purpose of representing our experience of space. I have often used more than one convention and more than one viewpoint in individual paintings. We saw how in Mehta's work, different conventions became integrated into one language. The different conventions in my work have a somewhat different relation to one another. The practice of perspective developed in Europe during the Renaissance creates a movement into the picture surface, while most Indian conventions create movement across the surface, either bottom to top or side to side. The coexistence of these two modes in one frame and the somewhat uneasy emotion that results from this perceptual disunity preoccupies me, and I have tried to give this unease the specific meanings of my experience. Last painting is replaced by a different ordering in this diptych. 7 different views, 3 on the left and 4 on the right, are linked together in a narrative sequence mapping the geography of a place. Chinese scroll painters have used the idea of a walk to structure a landscape which cannot be seen as a single image. A similar idea helped me give form to this view, which also combines different directions of light in different parts of the image. This recent work seeks to bring into painting the experience of the swelling forms of relief sculpture, the undulations of surface volume and the waxing and waning of sizes create a movement into and across the canvas. Can I have the lights, please? These works are, in a sense, attempts to bring the experience of conventions which have originated in other forms into the rectangular format painting that I practice. It is important for me that my paintings be experienced as a single image. This is a legacy of easel painting and comes from a need to stand and stare. This is tempered by movement across the surface, which embodies the passage of time. The stilled moment of seeing and the passage of time both have to find a place in my work. When the painters and theoreticians of the Renaissance developed the theory of perspective as a means to represent space correctly, they thought of it as a progress over the earlier modes prevalent in Gothic painting. When Cubism introduced a way of simultaneously representing different perceptions of objects in one image, they thought they were evolving a way more appropriate to modern consciousness of the world. When Rauschenberg made a move from nature to culture with his flatbed picture plane, it was thought that representation of the visual world was forever problematized. None of these developments, in fact, falsified an earlier mode or proved it inadequate. They only indicate a changed viewpoint. They make a new proposition. The validity of the new or the adequacy of the old is still a matter of significant relation to the lived experience of the artist and his audience. Atul Dodia's work communicates an excitement and a delight in the visual world. He is preoccupied with the modes of representing or rendering what he sees with his eyes. He has used the photograph as a step in capturing the exact nuances of texture and tone in paint. But already in this painting called Yogi, the two prints of Picasso and Man Ray on the wall point to an uneasy relation to the conventions of photorealism. They point to a need to question and deconstruct conventions of representation, which is what Dodia seems to be doing in this strange painting. There is no way one can respond to this painting as a single coherent image. It presents all possible conventions of representation in a fragmented and dispersed way. A metal detector stands in the center, and around it are projected hands and heads painted on the wall, lying on the floor, or hanging in space. It is an image like the image of mocking of Christ, and it is a response to the idea of Durga. It is a strongly incoherent image, painter's offering. A view from the window, a classical landscape, which in fact is an old faded photograph. On this, Dodia paints an iron grill with objects hanging from it. The large photo is of Cezanne's mountain. The smaller photo in the left upper corner refers to Ramana Maharshi. And the grill refers to the practice of tying objects to the lattice in a masjid as mannat. Dodia creates two layers, here separated as two orders of reality are linked by a wish. Oh Naina, again, here we see objects dispersed across the surface of the canvas. We are forced to take a jerky itinerary and perform a part-by-part reading of the images. We cannot do anything with a response that will lead up to a single coherent image. An image that does not slip back into its fragments. Slowly, the incoherence begins to take shape of a disturbing presence. Dodia's work has moved away from a single coherent image as the carrier of painterly meaning. He uses bits of reality, fragments, quotations. With these, he builds a layered, polyvalent image cramped with meanings. His purpose is to construct an image in paint that reflects our layered and contradictory relation to reality. And he succeeds admirably. Giv Patel. Giv Patel's artistic response to a multi-layered, contradictory and complex reality has been to hold small details of this reality in sharp focus. His aim is unflinching, clear sight. Over the last 15 years, Patel has painted a series of heads. Many of them are dead people, victims of meaningless violence. Patel submits these heads to a special kind of observation. He sees battered and torn tissue, clotted blood, and spicules of bone and tooth as paint. Seeing the clinical objectivity with which the colors of the bloated skin of this drowned woman are rendered, one is reminded of Monet's shock at himself, observing the changing colors on his dead wife's face. And one sees other parallels between Patel and the Impressionist master. The obsessive attention to sensation and the conflation of the subjective-objective divide. As the observation becomes more penetrating, we become simultaneously and intensely aware of the object of observation on one hand and our response to and reconstruction of the object on the other. Then, on the background of these thickly encrusted opaque images, Patel paints clearly distilled transparent images like this one. Reminiscent of Flemish heads of the 15th century, those archetypes of clear sight. The realist's ideal of transparency is misunderstood if it is taken to imply an unmediated connection to the world. No realist has ever underestimated the work needed in and through language to embody it with clear meaning. The last two paintings I show are two paintings of wells, They are among Patel's most recently completed works. They show the act of looking into a well and the play of light on the surface of water, alternately showing what is below and reflecting what is above. They continue the artist's meditation on transparency and opacity. Transparency and opacity of feelings, of thoughts, and of language. An apparently straightforward, impressionist, realist language has served Patel in his exploration and formulation of deep and complex themes. What we have seen is but a fraction of the diverse purposes that painting may serve. Many other artists continue to find, through painting, access to new ways of experiencing the world. And are the possibilities of paintings limitless then? Does its form not have inbuilt limitations to what it can say? Is there no ideology of painting? The full meaning of a form or a practice is only revealed through its connection to other forms and practices in the artist's life and in society. We cannot a priori lay down limits to the meaning of painting. Its continued practice will create new possibilities for it and inscribe itself into new experiences. Thank you.
Questions, please.
I'm going to have to struggle a bit with trying to get my thoughts together. So it's like this. We're trying to, ask ourselves whether there is a problem, right, in our times. I mean, maybe there is a certain kind of anxiety within all of us that brings us together on an occasion like this. And the question then we're asking ourselves in response to your paper is whether in some way painting as something that is framed within a particular canvas constitutes a manifestation of this larger crisis. Is it that painting, for example, is now constrained by the fact that it is contained within the rectangular frame, and that it's in a sense spinning out, or is it not required that it do so, or whatever it is? Now, typically, it seems to me, and I'm sort of responding to some extent to whatever has been said this morning as well, that when we face a certain kind of crisis, we end up with a certain set of symptomatic responses. One symptomatic response is usually to say that there is no crisis. Another symptomatic response is to say, yes, there is a crisis, but that we have the means to solve it from within. A third would be the more sort of extremist kind of thing that would say, if there is a crisis, we don't know what it is, etc., etc. But is it not, the question I'm asking you is that it seems to me that you've chosen the second, which is to say that there is a problem, but that painting has the capacity of solving the problem. In the process, you have designated painting, given the kind of painters you've chosen, as addressing certain kinds of problematics which you believe are the problematics of our time. To me, there's already a little bit of a slippage there. And what surprised me, quite frankly, is the fact that you have sort of chosen to, having sort of presented the problem, you've chosen to curtail the problem as belonging to a certain set of formal problems like realism, and so on, without necessarily getting into what else painting in fact is doing, could do, etc. Let me, for example, suggest to you that to make the kind of argument that you're making, you could have literally presented any four painters whom you admire. You've chosen these four painters. In the process, it seems to me that you have for the first time in fact constituted a certain kind of art historical intervention. I mean, we've always known, that Yves and yourself and Atul, have been very close, have taken from each other. It's the first time that you have actually presented a certain kind of larger intervention. And I was surprised by the fact that you did not, in a sense, push it through. I mean, it's interesting and important for me. I don't think anybody's actually ever said it quite this way. But the tenor of your paper, tries to once again focus on a certain issue, which almost by definition is something that is resolved even before it is presented.
Uh,
One of the things is that, as you said, I could have taken up many things that painting is doing. And I admire many things that are done with painting outside square format. I've chosen painters who are practicing in a traditional easel painting mode to focus on the problem, that the problem is not with the form. It is many times said and implied and openly said that the form of painting itself is a problem. That if you're painting, you're going to say a certain thing whether you like it or not. It's inscribed into the act of painting. And you cannot get away from this. Now, I accept that language does play a role like that. But I do not see that the form of or any form gets its meanings from, it gets its meaning from the activity of the practitioner. You know, so that is the reason why I've kind of focused on a small area and not. But I didn't quite. And what is the other part of your question? One response to this fact of whether I'm intervening in a specific sense as making a kind of group statement about certain painters. That is not so. That is not the intention.
I'm
saying it's not so because I don't think it's necessary to do so. It's necessary for me to identify what I like. And it's necessary for me to understand what I like. And that should constitute any art history that I build. You know, and not not an art history built out of a pre-understanding of what should be right and what should not be right. You know.
Tim?
No, go ahead. There is a disparity between what you said just now and what you said in your summary, which has a slightly different tone. Can I just quote the last sentence then? The artist must resist any degradation of his work. Co-option and radicalization can both be forms of degradation. Refusal to change easily is a form of resistance. That seems to be a very different feel to what you've just been saying. How do you respond to that?
Yeah. it's addressing a slightly different area, I think. It's addressing area that falls outside the practice of painting as such, and the question of the economics of painting and things that came up slightly earlier about painting has a good market and it has nothing to complain about. And installations are in a sense posed as a critique of this practice because they cannot be sold and bought. Now, a commodity again is not in that sense, the meaning or the content of a commodity doesn't lie in it, in the object, but in the relationship with which that object comes into as a social existence. So, that part of the thing applies to any radical opposition to a certain kind of commodification. On the other hand, a co-option, which is we do not know whether it is, but probably even in India today already, the possibility of painters being co-opted because they are so easily available and bought is possible.
Into
the establishment, yeah. And so resistance that, and one has to be conscious of being that both these dangers are there, and one has to resist on both these areas. But it didn't fall into the main.
Suruchi,
yes. From the very premise of your very first observation that painting, you said, comes from observing other paintings. And therefore, you are limiting yourself to those paintings that are existing already. Does painting only arise from seeing other paintings, or is there another purpose also, like addressing somebody, like communicating, like coming deep from the within, which is not limited to your body alone, which is limited from infinity to infinity?
If one understands painting as a language, yes, it necessarily has to come from a pre-existent communication system.
Perhaps the recognizable form of the painting has to come from that which has existed. But it has to, the purpose of communicating that comes from far deeper than paintings which are existing, which you have seen.
Surely, but I mean,
and
I don't think my formulation...
That is why your presentation is taking you only into a limited format of addressing people. It is not going beyond yourself as to what is your purpose, what is the reason why you are painting. It's taking you only from what you have seen. What you have seen is the language. It's a limited physical phenomena. You go beyond that. You go beyond that because you need to communicate, because you need to become one with the universe, because you need to become that object which you have painted.
Strong metaphor of the language. Would you consider the possibility that there are many languages? And if somebody is to come up with another language, then the existing language gets altered or has to retreat or has to change strategies or simply dies out. Now, you are saying it seems that you have kind of an ideal language in your mind, though you didn't say that, but you're constantly going, falling back to that. And I'm suggesting that if you were to consider there are many languages, and sometimes the more dominant or the new powerful language comes into picture, like let's say the language of mythology, and forces upon the existing language to change its strategies, its space, you know, its infrastructure, or simply retreat or die out. If you were to consider that, you would realize that it's not so simple as you would like to make it. That look, let's be faithful to the language of painting. And it's wonderful.
That's not what I mean at all. For example, when I say that painting derives from painting, I do not mean that painting derives only from painting.
No,
it derives from all our experiences. And if I read literature, if I see films, if I see installations, all these things will affect me. The point is that as a painter, they can affect me through the language of painting, that I have to transcribe my experience into a language of painting. Now, I'm not saying that this is necessarily has to be limited to this. It can happen. The first way I said is that painting changes because of the emergence of new forms. If new forms come on the stage, painting sees these new forms, painters see these new forms, and that experience changes. For example, knocking off your frames, changing the shape of your canvas, adding on objects to your canvas. All these acts are a response to new forms, which are perfectly valid. I have nothing against them. My complaint or my contention is that when one says that I have given up square traditional format painting because it's not enough for me to say what I want to say in that format, that is not true. You're taking up another format because you want, your aim has changed. I'll make another further concession or a point about this, that there are instances where the form of painting changes in response to the development of a particular idea, a concept being followed through to its logical end. For example, if painting is seen as essentially visual and flat, and if that's put as a canon of painting. And then if it also seems that painting must become an object, and then you do not find a way in which you can make it into an object, as long as it's flat, as long as you make a mark on it, you're going to make it into an illusion. And so you, as Frank Stella did, changed his format into a shaped canvas. Now that is a response to a certain specific problem. Now only if you take up that definition of painting are you caught within that trap. Or do you have to follow that logic? If you're not going to subscribe to that definition, then you do not have to fall into that.
Yeah, I'm only suggesting that if you were to take your metaphor a little more seriously, you will realize, going back to Wittgenstein, is that there are many games, and different games have different rules, and all of them don't constitute into a single game. So there is no single language of painting. And somehow, you know, you tend to fall back to that idea of a single, you know, language, which can within itself have many games, but all of them must ultimately be faithful to that, you know, rules of that game. I'm suggesting if some other rules come into picture, those rules might get deeply and radically affected. And that is the contention that is being made, and you are rejecting it. I thought you should simply say that I can imagine them to be coexisting without affecting this particular game. This is all you can go for, you know, and say. You can't go further than that and want to absorb and appropriate other games into your game. That is what I'm suggesting.
No, I don't think that I was intending to do that. Yeah, you
are. I'm finding this a little problem that why are you saying that the opposition is coming from when you go outside the easel painting format, that when you make it a shape or you add objects to it, that within the format of easel painting, of within the rectangle, there are so many ways of making painting, and I mean even some examples that Timothy showed, that there are sensitive pressures from within, I think to do without, that maybe you could deal a bit with that, that do you recognize those sort of pressures about the nature of oil painting or painting of with acrylic within this format, which somehow is not being addressed as a problematic. You are making as if were the other or the enemy, the shaped canvas or installation.
Right. I mean, if I have per se no objection or nothing against, if that is the kind of implication that has been read, to other forms in which painting can be done, or installations, or anything else. Yeah. So I don't see.
So much that is happening within painting, oil painting, within which
yes.
can take on aspects of.
It can,
and
but this
in terms of language, which I think you know.
But at the moment, what I am addressing is the fact that with the emergence of newer modes, mixed media and installations, there is definitely a view growing which takes a kind of avant-gardist view, one can say, which says that the newer forms are in fact in a position to represent or in a position to formulate what our existence or what our experiences are in a better way than painting is. Now, this is what I'm addressing myself to. And this is what this is the position that I'm rejecting.
One more question and then we have to stop. Yes, please.
But wasn't that the position taken up by painting in history? In certainly wisdom of it. Exactly the position you now are resisting, and that is that we have now a more adequate form of representation in terms of
painting itself took that position.
I'm just asking if the logic exactly the same, that painting itself took up that position that you now are resisting. And
when?
That is, in his historical terms, if one would say it's American avant-gardism, or even at other times, you can look in at particular points in France's history.
Yeah, surely, but all those positions and the whole history of avant-gardism or
the whole concept of avant-garde has been contested in Indian art practice. And all through the last 50 years, we have continuously held positions where we do not believe that the significance of an era or the significance of a form can thus be pinpointed to a certain kind of frontier position alone, and that all positions fall in line behind that particular position. Indian art practice hasn't been like that. It hasn't been a practice of movement following movement. And so what we are fed on as is a diverse experience of many painters working in many different ways. You have not had to make choices between, say, schools, that whether I am a follower of this school or that school and things like that.
So what Timothy was talking about in terms of a proscribed period, I think it was 20 years, is not your experience here, where certain things were prohibited, which is, if I understand you correctly.
Okay.
No.
I wonder.
No. It is not
So, yeah, sorry, do you think you'd paint in just the same way if you hadn't had to slightly oppose abstraction? Don't you think there was that in your background too?
Just say that again.
Don't you think there was something like an opposition to abstraction which probably helped to crystallize your own way of painting? Because, in other words, don't you think that...
If you're asking that as a personal question, I don't think actually that it was like that, because it may have been for people slightly elder to me. But I did not really have to. If you're saying that, Sheikh Bhupen, Gir, Vivan did have to kind of face to put their face against a certain kind of abstraction or tantric art or whatever. But I don't think that is.
Thank you very much, Sudhir.
Thank you.
I'll call Aisha Abraham to come.